Major League Baseball announced the All-MLB first and second team last night. Who did and didn't deserve to get recognized? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, November 15th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to get to who needs to win this offseason as far as teams that need to have a good free agency. I want to get to our own made-up superlatives from, you know, from last night, letdown players specifically, things like that. But first, Major League Baseball gave out the All-MLB first and second team nods last night. In the award show, they also gave out some of the non-official, you know, awards as well. They gave out the Reliever of the Year, DH Award, Comeback Player of the Year, things like that. All of the BBWAA voted awards, the big ones people think of, Cy Young, MVP, all of those are going to be announced next week.
Right.
But starting off with the All-MLB first team, it's really kind of hard to argue with any of these selections. Is this the rare year where Major League Baseball kind of nailed every single one of these?
For the first team, most definitely. I mean, there's, like you said, there's really not a single person on this first team that you can make an argument against being on there. Every single one of them is, they had fantastic seasons at their positions and they deserve the spot that they have earned.
Yeah, I mean, William Contreras at catcher for the Brewers played in almost every single game, which is just so rare for a catcher to do, right?
Right.
Really well. Vlad Guerrero batted over 300. Ketel Marte was an MVP candidate. So was Bobby Witt Jr. Jose Ramirez was by far the best hitter on the Guardians. Mm-hmm. I guess it's him and Stephen Kwan really up there. The outfield, Mookie Betts, Aaron Judge, Juan Soto. Easy to do that. Shohei Ohtani is the DH. That makes sense. Even the pitchers, Corbin Burns, Chris Sale, Paul Skenes, Tarik Skubal, Zach Wheeler, hard to argue with those. And your relievers, Manuel Clase, had an ERA under one in the regular season. Now, he didn't in October.
Yeah.
This is a regular season award. Ryan Helsley led baseball in saves. And, like, it's hard to find an issue here with the first team. The second team, I think you could quibble a little bit more with the second team. I'm okay with a lot of the infield, right? Salvador Perez at catcher had a resurgent year. Love what he did at age 34. I think there's a conversation to be had later in the offseason about, is Salvador Perez a Hall of Famer? Bryce Harper, Jose Altuve, Manny Machado, Francisco Lindor. The outfield, Jaron Duran, Teoscar Hernandez, Jackson Merrill. Duran led baseball in some categories, it's like triples and doubles and stuff. Yep. Teoscar was a silver slugger there in left, I believe in left field. Jackson Merrill is going to be one of the rookie of the year, is a rookie of the year finalist. DH is Yordan Alvarez. And then starting pitchers, Dylan Cease, Shota Imanaga, Michael King, Seth Lugo, Framber Valdez. Relievers, Mason Miller and Kirby Yates. Like, it's a pretty solid team, but I feel like we probably can each quibble with one of these spots if we really wanted to. Right.
Yeah, I have a major quibble with a guy that should have also been a MVP finalist in the American League, but he is not. And he is also left off of the all MLB first and second team. And that is shortstop Gunnar Henderson. He had a far better season than Francisco Lindor did. And Francisco Lindor, especially offensively, Francisco Lindor put up a 138 OPS plus and total 7 WAR, and Gunnar Henderson put up a 159 OPS plus with 9.1 B WAR. So just offensively alone, Gunnar Henderson should have run away with at least the second team All MLB over Francisco Lindor. And yes, Francisco Lindor is probably the better fielder. Not probably, he definitely is the better fielder, but Gunnar Henderson, in my opinion, is much more deserving of the All-MLB nod this year than Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, doing the head-to-head comparison that Baseball Reference does, where it puts them side-by-side and it highlights who had the lead, the only statistical category, one, that Francisco Lindor beat Gunnar Henderson is stolen bases. He had 29 to Gunner's 21. Every other category, WAR, OPS plus, batting average, hits, games, plate appearances, all of that, Gunnar Henderson beats Francisco Lindor. Now, Lindor won the Silver Slugger at shortstop in the National League. Gunnar obviously finished behind Bobby Witt Jr. for that. So right. There's your issues. Henderson was an all-star. Lindor was not. And so I do think that's a major quibble. I initially went into this with my own little quibble about designated hitter. I thought Marcell Ozuna played well enough to be on the second team. He's obviously in the same league as Shohei. He's not going to win. You know, he didn't win anything as far as designated hitter of the year, Silver Slugger, any of that stuff. And I initially thought Marcell Ozuna should have been the second team DH. But when you do that same Baseball Reference comparison, he clears Yordan in the counting stats, right? In hits and homers and RBI, because he played all 162 games. Yordan played 147. But when you look at the rate stats, batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, all that stuff, even OPS plus, right? Yordan, 172 OPS plus, Marcell Ozuna, 154. I do think that end of year slump for Ozuna really kind of hurt him here. He was within shooting distance of Yordan in a lot of these rate stats, but he was behind because he had that terrible last month where he was still hitting, but he wasn't hitting for any power whatsoever. And so he stuck on 39 homers for a good part of the last month of the year and all of that. And so it's kind of hard to make that argument. I did initially wonder if Seth Lugo deserved to be in there or not. Thought that was a little surprising at first. And then you go pull his numbers. He led baseball in starts with 33, 16-9 with a 3 ERA, led the American League in batters faced with 836, won a gold glove. And then it's the argument of, well, who do you put in over him? And it's just kind of hard to figure out, like, who deserved to be in that second team for starting pitchers over Seth Lugo. You can find guys who outperformed him, like Ronaldo Lopez, but it's smaller sample sizes, right? They didn't have enough innings to qualify and all of that. I do think the Framber Valdez addition is, I'm glad to see them recognize that you can have a dominant second half and recover, right? After the All-Star break, Framber Valdez went 7-2 with a 1.96 ERA. And it lowered his total ERA down to 2.91 because he struggled in the first half. So I'm glad to see that they can recognize a dude who posted all year and got consistently better down the stretch should be on the team. Is there, if you had another spot to give, is there anybody you think you would throw into this team that deserved to get recognized? Or is this surprisingly one of the better outside of your big quibble at shortstop, is this one of the better all MLB teams we've seen recently?
Yeah, no, this is outside of that, this is pretty spot on, just across the board for me. And I do have a fun fact to share with you about Yordan Alvarez.
Okay.
He is one of four players that have been named to an all MLB team five or more times. And this award, this accolade started in 2019.
Okay.
And the other two players,
the other two players, let me guess. I'm going to say Mookie Betts.
He has five.
Okay. And I'm going to think consistently great hitters who are almost every single year. Jose Altuve.
Nope.
No. Okay.
He's only been twice.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. All right. I got Mookie Betts. I feel a little vindicated. Who's the other one?
So the other one with five is Freddie Freeman.
Duh.
God. And those three are tied for second behind one batter who has seven.
So pretty much every year since they created this thing.
Plus one extra.
That's
a little hint.
I got nothing. I
should know this. Shohei Ohtani.
Of course. Of course it's Shohei Ohtani. I should have had that. Absolutely should have had that. Speaking of Shohei Ohtani, he won a couple other awards last night. They gave out the Hank Aaron Award, the best offensive performer in each league. This is the non-BBWAA version of the MVP, essentially. Aaron Judge won it for the American League. Shohei won it for the National League. Shohei also won the Edgar Martinez Outstanding Designated Hitter Award. Obviously, 50-50 year. Come on. He's going to win every possible award you can win that involves hitting. Some of the other interesting ones here. Reliever of the year, named after Mariano Rivera in the American League, goes to Emmanuel Clase. 0.61 ERA with 9 unintentional walks in 74 and a third innings. Absurd statistic. Ryan Helsley wins it for the National League. Again, franchise record for the Cardinals. 49 saves, led all of baseball. Comeback player of the year, American League, Garrett Crochet. National League, Chris Sale. The trick to winning this award apparently is have played for the White Sox at some point in time in your career. Were there better choices for either of these comeback player of the year awards, or you think Crochet and Sale were the right guys to get those?
No, this is another one that's pretty spot on because Chris Sale's been dealing with injuries. Nobody expected him to even to pitch as much as he did, much less as good as he did. And then for Garrett Crochet, you know, he's went from being a reliever to being a starter and was pretty solid at it. So it's
he wasn't bad.
Yeah, he was passable. And so, yeah, no, this is another one where they're pretty spot on with the award here.
We were chatting about this off air, and we jokingly came up with the letdown player of the year award. Who, if you're doing a comeback player of the year, the player who, I guess, rallied to produce well after missing time, injury, ineffectiveness, whatever it was, who's the player that their performance this year was the biggest letdown from what we thought they could do or what they did last year? And please don't take mine.
yeah, we haven't talked about this. I might. I'm not sure. I'm going to go with a guy that's also in a contract year, and I'm going to say Pete Alonso because everybody, you know, he's expected to be a 40-50 home run guy, and this year he was not that guy. And again, in a contract year, when most players, as we've talked about recently, play above their heads, he had one of the worst seasons of his career. As far as OPS plus goes, it was tied for the second worst season of his career with only quote unquote 34 home runs, 240, 329, 459 batting line. And like I said, a 123 OPS plus, though he did play in all 162 games. So that is a little feather in his cap there. But for me, the letdown player of the year is gotta be Pete Alonso.
Yeah. His 788 OPS, lowest of his career. His 172 strikeouts, the most of his career. 88 RBI, lowest in a full season of his career. Obviously, 2020 is kind of exempt here. And the 34 home runs, lowest of his career. We're in a similar, we're in the same position, same division. I've got Matt Olson.
Okay.
This is one, Matt Olson, fourth place finisher in MVP in 2023, silver slugger. After hitting 54 home runs, led all of baseball, 139 RBI, led the National League with a 604 slugging. He turns around this season, and his slugging is almost 150 points lower. Finishes with a 457 slug. Only hits 29 homers, doesn't break 100 RBI, goes from 7.4 WAR last year to 4 WAR this year, an OPS of 164 to an OPS of 118. And it's one of those things where it looks this good because he had a really hot finish to the year. Like, he rallied late. 12 of his home runs came in August or September. He batted 264 in August and 319 in September. But before that, I mean, he batted 202 in the first month of the season. He batted 172 in July. And for a team that was missing so many pieces all year in Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider, Austin Riley missed a bunch of time. Ozzie Albies missed a bunch of time. To have Matt Olson play as poorly as he did for most of the season, I think ended up potentially being one of the difference makers in the way their season ended. They got to the postseason by winning game 162, a doubleheader on Monday, the day before the wild card round started. And they had gone through all of their pitching. And so they had to start. I mean, they started AJ Smith-Shaver, a prospect in San Diego. and he got shelled. And Alex Anthopoulos told us, like, if we had clinched earlier, I felt like it would have been good if we could have clinched earlier. And I think if Matt Olson could have played even like what he played in August, just batting, you know, 264, batting reasonably, if he could have done that earlier in the year, you know, when he batted 202 in April, when he batted 172 in July, if he could have done that earlier in the year, it maybe never gets to that game 162. Maybe you can clinch going into that final weekend and have a chance to set up your pitching, and maybe you're able to do something against the Padres. I still don't think they did. The offense was the issue, really, for Atlanta in the postseason, just like it has been the last couple seasons. But Matt Olson really kind of, I was kind of disappointed with what happened and the way his season went, not necessarily as a whole, but what the end result ended up being after some of his monthly struggles in the year.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on with that one. That he needed to step up for the team with all the other pieces that were missing, because he doesn't miss time. As you said, he played 162 games, and he's done that multiple times throughout his career.
Yeah, I think this is the third consecutive season he's played every single game. He hasn't missed a game, if I remember right, since early in 2021.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's this generation's Cal Ripken, but
there you go.
He needed to step up, and he didn't. And he, like you said, he did turn it around at the end of the season. But I do think that, again, like you said, if he'd even hit 262 like he did in August, throughout the season, the Braves probably would have continued their National League East Division champion streak and held on and held the Phillies off a little bit better than they did.
Yeah, so a little disappointing there. Talking about the offseason kind of here, you know, as we're doing on First Pitch, we've seen a lot of interesting news about teams that are in or out on certain free agents. Folks are starting to meet with Juan Soto, all of that stuff. What teams, and I guess I want you to think about this, and I'll go ahead and start my answer first because I've had more time to think about it. What teams need to win the offseason to make the case to their fans that they are legitimately trying to get back to where that franchise should be and things like that? And I think, you know, like while you think about it, I'm going to go ahead and say one of my two teams, because I've had time to think about this, it's the Boston Red Sox. This is something they've made the postseason exactly once in the last 6 years. They were 78-84 the last two seasons, and they parlayed Jaron Duran's all MLB second team season into a 3-game improvement. They went 81-81, and they went from fifth place to third place. It's the third straight year they finished in double digits out of the division, 21 games, 23 games, and then 13 games out this year. And attendance for the first time was pretty flat. They actually went down slightly from their attendance in 2023. Now it's by a matter of like 13,000 fans, which is, you know, one day game being a night game or something. But for an organization that traded away Mookie Betts, that let Xander Bogaerts walk for almost nothing, and then finally made a signing to bring back one of their own players, and it was Rafael Devers, who I think you objectively could argue is probably the weakest of those three, or maybe he's slightly above Bogaerts because Bogaerts is now a second baseman. But the Boston Red Sox need to show their fans that they are investing in getting this team back to where it historically has been and should be. And to have gone into last offseason with that full throttle comment and then absolutely not gone full throttle in the offseason, they had a 3-hour meeting with Juan Soto, I think yesterday. They legitimately need to be aggressive in free agency to at least get a winning record for, again, only the second time since 2019. Simply because I don't know how much more Boston fans are going to stand for this. They, like I said, attendance went down this year from last season, despite the team technically being better.
Yeah, and if you look at things, it's really been a consistent trend for them really since Alex Cora came over as manager, and he won the World Series the first year he was there. But, and this is a little bit different than college athletics because the manager doesn't really have a say in the team that's put on the field, but it was a much better team that they had then. They still had Mookie Betts in 2018. They still had just all of their big name stars, and it was just a much better team than it is now. And yes, they have improved this year over last year, and they may have been four or five wins better if Tristan Casas wasn't hurt for the majority of the season, or another three or four wins better if Trevor Story wasn't hurt. But you can't depend on Trevor Story to not be hurt, because his entire tenure with the Red Sox has been spent on the injured list, but for the most part. And so yeah, I agree. They have to be very aggressive this offseason and make sure that they win and to get at least one up on the Yankees.
Yeah, it's just they've got to do something here, right? It's a very competitive division. You know, even Toronto is trying to get better. They were in on Shohei, they're in on Soto, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have, like, who else do you think of that needs to be aggressive this offseason and win the offseason? And if not, I've got more. I've thought more about it, but who do you have?
No, I do have one. For me, it's the Chicago Cubs.
That's who I had. Yeah, that's who I had.
Is it? Okay, cool.
Go ahead.
So the Chicago Cubs, the past 2 years, they've gone 83-79. And one of those was with David Ross, and one of those was with Craig Counsell, who they brought in to be an improvement over David Ross. And he had the same exact record. They finished second in the National League Central in both of those years. Last year, they were 9 games back. This year, they were 10 games back. And it's just they expected Craig Counsell to be the guy to get them over the hump and help them be a little bit better than David Ross was with the club. And it was status quo. And so I think that they have to really go after some of the big name guys this year to pair with your Pete Crow Armstrongs, your Michael Bush, Cody Bellinger, who did not exercise his opt out and is still in the club. If they don't trade him, then, you know, they need to go after another big name to pair with those guys, as well as improving their pitching staff. Adding a guy like Corbin Burns or Blake Snell would work wonders.
Yeah.
Max Fried, yeah, it would work wonders for their roster.
Yeah, and the issue here is they've already said they're out on Juan Soto. They've already kind of indicated they're not going to pursue Juan Soto because – and it's funny because the Cubs have – it kind of feels like it's a Braves-esque – most of the lineup is locked in, right? Like, you've got guys that it's going to be hard to find somebody to replace the guy who's there in the lineup. And you could do it. They've also got prospects waiting to come up. Matt Shaw, an option at second base or third base. Owen Casey's a power hitting corner outfielder that they don't really have a spot for right now. And so you're in this weird position of, I'm going to argue you got one of the best case scenarios you were going to get out of your rotation this year, because all 5 members of your rotation made 24 or more starts.
Yeah.
Now, the Kyle Hendricks starts weren't great. He had an ERA of 5.92, but everybody else, Shota Imanaga had an ERA under 3. Everybody else had an ERA in the 3s. You only used 11 different starters, and 3 of those only started 1 game. And, like, after that, it was 7 starts, 8 starts, 10 starts, and then your 5 guys who all had 24 or more. And your starters had an ERA of, I think, 3.77. The relievers were right behind them. There's some questions about the bullpen. I do think you need to figure out who your closer is. Hector Neris led the team with 17 saves. Porter Hodge came up late, had 9 down the stretch. I like Porter Hodge. I think he's probably better as your closer over Hector Neris. But it's a situation here where you can't just add a small piece here or there and get meaningfully better, right? You have to make big swings. You have to find good, exceptionally good players to add to this. And so far, all indications are that they're not going to do that. It's that they just want to kind of run it back with the same crew. And like you pointed out in the open, it's the second straight year they've gone 83-79 with largely the same team. And so running it back with that same team again just feels like it's not going to be enough to catch up to the Brewers. They actually, same record, they finished 1 game farther back this year than they did last year. 10 games back this year. It was only 9 last year. And so more fans are attending games. Their attendance was up. You would assume that would mean revenue is up. And it's time to turn around and take some of that revenue and go get a not, I mean, if it's not Juan Soto, which I don't see a reason why this team couldn't be in on Juan Soto, but if it's not Juan Soto, you need to go out and get some top tier free agent who could legitimately make this team better. And they just haven't really, it doesn't really feel like they're willing to do that. And I think Cubs fans deserve better.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you, on your pitching note, for their starting pitching last year in 2024, they ranked 6th in Major League Baseball with a 3.77 ERA. And that is, again, including Kyle Hendricks's almost 6 ERA. And but as far as Hector Neris goes, he is no longer with the team. He was traded to the Astros. But they need to do something. They need to add a pitcher to make up for the lack of starts that they're getting with Kyle Hendricks gone, who can produce a better ERA, because other than that, their pitching staff is pretty good, and they need to bring in another reliever at the very least, but it's got to be a big name guy.
Can you imagine this team adding, let's say, Tanner Scott and Max Fried? Like what this, the rotation, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon, Max Fried, Javier Assad, Justin Steele. That is one of the best rotations in baseball right there.
Yeah,
you bring absolutely. In a guy like Tanner Scott to run your back end, and you've added, I mean, you've taken on 35 to 40 million AAV on your payroll right there. Maybe you have to trade Bellinger to make that work, but I feel like that's the biggest way to improvement is adding either a big bat to provide you some power, because your leader in home runs was Ian Happ with 25. Yeah. You only had 3 players hit more than 20. Michael Busch had 21 at first base. Seiya Suzuki had 21 at DH. And so, I mean, if you're not going to go out and add another slugger, right? And I understand that they maybe want to get away from the qualifying offer. There's still guys they can sign, like a Blake Snell who doesn't have a qualifying offer. And I think the idea of having too many lefties in the rotation is a little bit overblown. You don't have to throw all your lefties back to back. Your lefties do different things. And so right. It's not like Imanaga and Taillon going back to back, or I'm sorry, Steele. Imanaga and Steele going back to back doesn't necessarily give teams an advantage because they see two lefties back to back, because they're different types of lefties, right? Adding Max Fried or Blake Snell, different types of lefties, doesn't give you an advantage there if you're opposing team. I think what you need here is impact. This is one of the teams, there's not a lot of holes, but you need impact players. You can't just go out, make a signing to make a signing and get better. You have to find an impact player, because this is a team that is solidly above average everywhere, but not really exceptional anywhere. And that's the issue you have here.
Yeah, and to your point about trading Bellinger, if they did trade Bellinger to free up some money, that would give them an opportunity to move Isak Paredes from third base, where he really doesn't have the arm to play third base. His arm is the 31st percentile in Major League Baseball, and his outs above average is not bad. It's -1, but they could move him to right field and bring in a guy like Alex Breckman, who is a Gold Glover at third base and who is pretty much in line offensively with Cody Bellinger, just doesn't have the same power as Cody Bellinger, but it would improve their infield defense tremendously. And a lot of their pitchers are ground ball pitchers. So it would improve their pitching staff even more than it already is.
Yeah. I mean, there's multiple different ways to do this. I mean, they could even have Paredes DH and do something like Owen Casey, right? They could have them split time with Michael Busch at first base, you know, and you promote a prospect to play third. I mean, there's lots of ways they could do this. And it just feels like they need to do something that makes a legitimate impact, because they can't just run it back and hope the Brewers finally don't figure it out, because that's not worked to this point in time. And so we'll see what happens. But either way, if you have a different idea of who you think should be the team that has to win this offseason, let us know. You can leave a comment on the video down below, or you can tweet at us. I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. This has been First Pitch for Friday, November 15th. We'll see you next time on First Pitch.